session number 24611, reel 3.
Mr. Campbell, reel 3. You talk about learning to drive the Churchill at the guards depot at Pirbright,
yeah.
The MT section, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You were. What about the actual controls you had? You mentioned that the bar and things.
The tiller bar.
What exactly other controls did they have? Or was that it?
That was it. Just a basic tiller bar and the gate change, your clutch and your accelerator, and that was it.
No brake, of course. Or
no brake. To turn your tank, the Churchill tank, was that you pulled, if you wanted to turn left, you stopped the left track by pulling the tiller bar, and the right track kept going, which meant that you were actually sliding round on your left track because the other track was still moving, and it was the opposite if you wanted to go right. That was the basics.
Was there anything else you had to learn about driving? I mean, anything you had to bear in mind?
Not in the actual driving, but in the actual use of the tank in warfare, you were taught different things. You were taught about how to put your tank into a hull down position, as they called it.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Which meant that if you could find one, your tank went into a dip with only the turret shown above the ground, which made it a smaller target for the enemy to hit you. Again, if you were going up a hill in the out in the country or any place like that, instead of going up and over the hill, because of your tank would be pointing up into the air when you're on the brow of the hill, and the softest part of your tank is the underbelly. You were told to, if possible, to go round the hill as opposed to going over the top. Little things like that you had to sort of keep in mind what you were doing. That the Churchill tank, when it first started...
Well, I was going to ask you, can you tell us a bit about the Churchill? What was it like, the armour, the gun, the layout?
Yeah, that's just what I'm going
to... And what you thought of it, yeah.
The Churchill had a two-pounder gun, which was like a pea shooter. And then they mounted a six-pounder gun, which was better, but still not the equivalent of the German 88. I did all my training on the six-pounder. We used to go out on the ranges. It had two machine guns called Biza guns. One was worked by the co-driver. The other one was worked by the gunner in the main turret alongside the big gun. The breech of the six-pounder came back about a foot from your wireless during the recoil after you fired the shell. It was about a foot of a difference. All you got was the cordite, the smell of the cordite inside the tank, although you had the vents which you could open up in the tank. Normally, we used to keep the turret open so that the smoke went out. It was all manual controls.
What do you mean by that?
You had to work everything by hand. Your elevation and depression was all worked by hand. Your turret... The mover turret was worked by hand that way. Turn tires. Your trigger, you had a hand trigger on your big gun, or you had a foot trigger, which you just stood on. Something like an electric sewing machine. You stand on it and the machine goes. You stand on that and the gun fires. You had your telescope.
Wasn't that a bit risky?
It was, because at one time I'm going ahead of myself.
Oh, I'll come back to it then. I'm sorry, I don't want to... But, so there was a risk there in accidentally firing the gun.
Yeah, well, normally it was kept. The gun wasn't kept loaded. So if you jumped on the foot trigger, nothing happened.
We'll come to the time when obviously something did. Yeah. You were mentioning the telescope. This is...
Yeah, well, it was actually your sight, and it had markings on it, and you could see where your shell landed on your markings.
If you were the gunner,
uh-huh. You could see where your shell landed with your markings, and you could, the officer, he gave you the range, approximately, and then if your shell landed slightly to the right, or the left, or ahead or before your target, he would automatically tell you, because he had his binoculars looking at your target, and you adjusted your sight to fit that, and fired again.
So you had this sight, telescopic sight. What about the armour? What would you say about the armour? Was it good or bad or indifferent? Or
in the Churchill, it was one of the heaviest tanks at the time. Actually, the armour was quite thick, be about 2, maybe 3 inches thick in the front. In the bottom of the turret in the tank that I was in, we had sandbags.
That's when you went into action, isn't it? Yep. But you were confident in the armour, at least when you were in the trailer. You thought it was okay. I mean, you weren't worried about it.
Wasn't worried, because I thought it cut my safety, because bullets couldn't enter a tank, whereas if you were an infantryman, you were open to everything, from the lowest bullet to the biggest shell. So it cut the risk.
What about the mechanical reliability of the engine and the sort of speed? What would you comment on that?
Well, a lot of them thought that the engine wasn't up to much, although we had no problem. I never ever found any problem with the engine. The speed...
What did they reckon was the problem? I know you didn't...
Well, they just said that they weren't good enough. They didn't go fast enough, etc. And there's always some little thing happening to them.
But you didn't find that?
I didn't find that, no.
But what about the speed? Would you say it was faster?
The speed was approximately 15 miles an hour, the top speed of the Churchill. It weighed about 40 ton, the Churchill. It was solid. It was really solid.
So the speed was less than some tanks?
Oh,
less,
yes.
Less than the Sherman?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And what was your overall opinion? I mean, how did you compare the Sherman? Because there were it with the things like the Sherman. Because Shermans were about by then, weren't they?
Well, we used to call the Shermans Ronson Lighters, because the armour was so soft that a shell went into them and used to burst into flames. Whereas the Churchill could take a few hits without really anything happening, unless they hit you on the soft spot. And we were always told to aim, if possible, between the turret and the main body of the tank, where it joined. That was a weak spot. We were always told to try and aim for that.
What about, did you see the Sherman as having some advantages, though? Because I think they had, some of them had better guns. They certainly were faster.
The Shermans were faster, and there was more of them because they were mass-produced.
But do you actually preferred the Churchill?
I preferred the Churchill to the Sherman, yes.
If you'd had a choice, you'd have gone for what you got.
Yes, uh-huh.
And the other thing is the wireless. I know you don't know which number wireless it was, but what about the wireless and intercom arrangements? Because sometimes, did they have the system whereby they had an intercom as well as a wireless?
Oh, yes. Because you couldn't, once your tank was rolling, it was very noisy. And you couldn't hear yourself speak. So you were actually speaking into your microphones to each other.
You were being trained as a driver operator. When did you get your wireless training? Did you get it then, or was that later on?
No, then. Everything was in this school. You went to your school for this.
What do you remember of your wireless training?
They remember that it was a handheld microphone you had, and you had to press the switch to speak. You let it go. It was about that size.
About 8 inches.
About 8 inches and around, but on the top, where you spoke into the mic. You were taught codes, secret codes.
What sort of thing?
One was called a Slidex. Slidex code.
What was that? How did it work?
Let's think. It was a code that was changed every morning. It was consisted of the alphabet with a spare letter, so that if Jerry clicked today, tomorrow, he wouldn't know. He would have to look at, start from the beginning again, because we had changed the code. And that's why it was called the Slidex code. It was changed every day. He used to double up the way they worked it. If your message had a letter that was duplicated in the one word, then you used this Slidex, which Jerry didn't know, but you knew because you had your book. You get up and you checked on it. But most of the stuff was done in codes, or there were times when the you had what they called wireless silence, and all you did is you had your wireless on, your ear on, and you just sat listening.
But wouldn't you mostly use a voice transmission rather than dot dash?
Yes, it was all voice rather than. So although you were taught.
How would the code come into it? Do you see what I mean? I mean, because the code was a written.
Well, there, you were taught the Morse code, and you tapped it out on the Morse code.
How did you do with the Morse code?
Oh, I've forgotten most of it now.
Did you find, some people find it easy, some people find it very difficult. How did you find it?
Well, it wasn't too bad, really, but it set the old brain cells working. When you were, if you hadn't used it for a wee while, you know, you're starting to think. Although you had a copy of it that you could look up, you know, and they taught you how to do it, how to rest your wrist, you're like that. Instead of doing that, you just tapped it. You didn't batter it when it came through. You were taught all that at the school.
And what about wireless procedure, you know, when you're on the wireless? You mentioned about radio silence, but what about the sort of...
There's certain ways of speaking. Uh-huh. If you got a message and you understood it, it was Roger, over and out. Which meant that you understood what was being said to you. And just little things like that. It was just an other way of speaking on wireless, which, as far as I know, are still used today.
Any other training you got at the
Not that I can think of. The wireless, the driving.
You learned the gun as well?
The gun, yes. The wireless operator loaded the gun. The wireless operator, that was part of his job.
Do you remember the gun loading, the 6-pounder gun drill? If you know, how did you actually do it in a tank?
Well, you lifted the shell.
Oh, where was it stored?
It was stored round about the tank. At the back of you. It was round the
in cases or against the wall? Or
against the wall, in brackets. In brackets. And you got the shell out. You put it into the breech. And as you put it into the breech, you hit it with pushing your arm up and out of the way, because the breech block just closed on you. If you were too slow, it could catch your fingers. So it was a case of hitting it and your arm comes up at the same time and the breech block closes on it. And then the gunner fired it when he was ready. And then the shell case came out.
What would you do with the shell case?
Throw it out the tank. There's two or three sometimes on the floor. But the you had to watch because they were hot. You got gloves and just threw it out the
tank.
What
speed of fire could you get up to with a 6-pounder? When you,
Well, it all depended upon the loader and the gunner. I mean, if the loader was quick, it was a case of loading, loading, loading.
And it was a wireless operator who would do the loading.
The wireless operator did the loading, uh-huh.
And, well, as I say, any other training you remember there? We've done most I can think of.
No, that was about all. Because I did the driving. We're told how to command the tank. But that came natural, you know, to you.
What do you mean?
Well, just the how to give instructions to the driver, for instance. You know, straight ahead, right turn. Then you got the target left of so-and-so, so many degrees, and things like that. That was about all.
So you really learnt it all?
Yes, sir. Leo. So-called Leo. That's why I went through the courses. I mean, some boys only went through the gunnery course, others went through the driving course. But I went through what they called a DO, driver operator.
Mm-hmm. Now, so how long did this take? You'd gone to Purbrook roundabout late September. We're not quite sure, but, you know, sometime in that time.
Well, I was on the tank straight up until the invasion, because we moved from Purbrook up to the Bovington, tank place, Bovington.
We moved to there. Would that be May or actually in June?
No, I'm not very sure, to be honest with you, that.
Were you there long, for a week or so?
No, I was at Bovington for quite a while. Right up, the invasion took place. Well, the planes went across when we were at Bovington.
The Armada. You don't know how long, you don't know when you left.
I can't remember how long.
Right to go there.
No. But I was still at Bovington when the first wave of planes went across, and that was the 6th of June.
At Bovington, your training just carried on
Just carried on. It's a massive place there. I don't know what they would call it, but there were tank grounds. It's still there to this day. Tank grounds. It's a tank museum now, seemingly.
What was it like driving on the... Because those tank grounds were quite testy. What was it like...
Fantastic. I really loved it. There was one laugh there. We came, young lads came, they had asked to be put on the tanks. So we were told to, I was told anyway, to take them out and let them see just what like the tank was. This lad, nothing, a tank, nothing at all. Well, I'll show you, lad. So I took him down what they called the gut. It was the banks were like that. It looked like an old riverbed, and it went down and round. Now, you weren't supposed to do it at top speed on the tank. You're supposed to take your time going down. Right, so I had three of them in the tank. This boy's standing, you see. I had the helmets on, because you get bumped about. Now, I went down this gut at top speed with him. He was as sick as a dog when he got out of the tank. It's just like being on a fairground. The tank dips, you know, you feel yourself going down and coming up again. And when you go up and you go onto the top of the hill, you put her into first gear to get to the top. Once you're on top of the hill, you find the tank starts to sway going down, and as she's going down, you ram her into second or third gear to give her the speed down the hill again. You know, I don't think you like that very much.
Did they practice formations at all? Formation driving with the tanks, you know, because I mean, when you have a tank, you'd often go in a big batch of you.
Yeah, well, not really. It was a case of what we actually were taught was to work in cooperation with the RAF.
Tell us about that. That's very interesting.
Well, we moved down to a place in Wales, right on the shore, opposite Anglesey, and we were billeted on an RAF drone there, which really opened our eyes when we found out what the RAF had. It was a case of, they had sheets on the bed, pillowcases, real beds, phones beside the beds, cinema, a canteen which sold everything. When you went for your meals, would you like coffee or tea? That tea's got sugar in it, that coffee's got sugar in it, that's without sugar. What would you like? Porridge, cornflakes, all given to you in cups. No mugs, not like you in the army. And we were really surprised. So we went to the cinema inside the camp with this WAF girl. I wasn't married at the time. And when we came out the cinema, it was 10:45. I wish we had a canteen that was open, I'd like a cup of tea. Oh, she says, come on down. She says, the Navi's open. I said, it's 10:45. Oh, she says, that's all right. She says, it opens. She says, to let the people when the cinema's finished, to let them have a bite to eat. She says, doesn't your Navi open? I says, our Navi is closed. The lights are out at 10 o'clock. Oh, she says, not here. She says, no. We went down to the canteen, the Navi canteen, and there's crowds of them all sitting enjoying themselves, beer, coffee, you name it, they had it, and we had a bite to eat, which was really strange compared to the conditions that we were living in the army. It really opened our eyes.
Now, what about this cooperation?
Well,
what were you actually doing? How did you cooperate with the
army? Well, they were trying to, as far as I could make out, they were trying to do the same as what the Germans were doing with their Blitzkrieg. How the bombers came across, or the fighters came across, and gave you covering fire, and blasted away for you, to take the pressure off you. And this is what we were doing. We're on wireless contact with the planes up above.
And that's what you were practicing while...
That's what we were practicing down there, uh-huh.
And how well did it work?
It worked quite well, actually. It actually came in handy once we went. I went into Germany. It came in very handy on one occasion.
We will come into it. Anything else about your time in Wales? I mean, you know, I know you just went for a course there, really.
No, the only thing is that was the only place that the first time I'd ever gone up in an aeroplane.
Tell me about that.
Well,
which aircraft was it? Would you know?
The girl had asked me if I'd ever been in a plane. I said no, but I would love to go up in one. Oh, she says, I'll get you and your pal to go up in one. How will you do that? Oh, she says, I'll speak to the Air Force officer. She said, will you do anything tomorrow? I says, no. I said, it's the day off. It's Sunday. All right. She said, I'll contact you. All right, then. So on the Sunday morning, she contacted us and said that there was a plane ready for us, but we would have to go across to the parachute place and pick up a parachute. Well, this friend of mine and I walked across, never had a parachute in my life, picked up these parachutes to show us how to put them on. So, went into the plane. So, I sat beside the pilot. I didn't know what type of plane it was at the time. My friend sat at the back. The plane took off, had two propellers on it. It took off. I thought, oh, this is great, I love this. Then all of a sudden, I saw the propeller stop, and the plane went down, and my stomach went up. And I thought, good Lord, don't tell me we're going to crash. The pilot laughed, and he spoke through his mic. He said, have you never been on a plane before? He said, no. I said, are you ever going to crash? No, 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 no. He said, this plane's on test. I said, on test? Nobody told us that. She says, oh, she says, it's all right. She says, I'll start the engines again. So the engine started, and the plane went up, and my stomach went down. But when we came off the plane, I found out it was an Avro Anson. I asked the pilot. They said it's an Avro Anson. When we came off, my legs and my friend's legs were as weak as anything. Could hardly walk for our first flight. But I thoroughly enjoyed it just the same. So it was quite good.
Now, while you were at Bovingdon, I mean, were you aware of the second front, D-Day was coming up, this sort of thing? And how did you feel about it? I mean, were you keen to get involved or were you nervous?
No,
how were you feeling?
Really. Well, we heard the planes at night time. We didn't know what it was. We thought it was a bombing raid until the dawn came. And we could see masses of planes all going across. We were moved from Bovingdon down to that day, down to a place outside Swanage, down on the Channel Coast. And we were billeted down there, and we were on top of this cliff.
Now, when you say we, you were in a training unit. When did had you formed a unit yet, or a battalion of tanks?
It was just a battalion that sent down.
When had this been formed?
It was just a case of they got their battalion together at Bovington and they put us on trucks and took us down. We didn't take the tanks down, we just went down.
Was this when the battalion was formed, or had you been formed earlier?
Oh, the battalion was formed earlier, long before I went into it.
So you joined them when you went to Pervright, or when did you actually join? Because it was
the third battalion.
Royal Scots, wasn't it?
No, Scots Guards.
Sorry, yes. Terrible mistake to make. Third Battalion, Scots Guards, and they were a tank unit. But yeah. When did you actually join them?
I joined at Pertwright.
When you went to Pertwright?
I joined at Pertwright, That's when I asked that officer to go into the mechanised. Remember?
Yeah, that's when you'd done
that's
it.
That's when I joined.
What happened when you got to Swanage?
We were billeted down there on top of the cliffs. We found out it was a case if the Germans threw the first wave back and they followed them on, because at that time the Germans had every idea of invading as well, but nothing really happened. But we saw quite a number of the American equipment being washed up on the shore and bodies and that. And we knew that it was something big that was going on.